operations for the Cox Media Group, overseeing 15 television and 86 radio stations. He is a veteran of 43 years in broadcasting. He currently serves as the chair of the MSTV's engineering committee. He's had that job since 2003. So as I serve on that committee, in a way, Sterling is my boss. Hi, boss. For 3 years, he chaired the ATSC Planning Committee. He's a member of the board of directors and participates in several technical committees on the ATSC. He has been active in digital radio standardization in the NRSC. He also chairs the technical group of the Open Mobile Video Coalition. He's a SMPTE member since 74. He also is a member of IEEE, AES, SBE, and RTNDA. He has received numerous achievement awards over his career, including the 2009 NAB Engineering Achievement Award. In 2009, he also became a SMPTE Fellow, and last night here at this conference at the SBE Awards Banquet, he became the latest SBE Fellow. Today, Sterling has his OMVC OTAG hat on to speak about the latest on mobile DTV. Sterling Davis.
Okay. Technology. Thank you, Leonard. Appreciate it. Today, I'm going to talk about something decidedly non-technical. This is a totally non-technical presentation. The technicalities of how mobile television works and the ATSC standard is going to be covered in the next paper by Wayne. So this paper, as it's indicated in the program, is 100% devoted to the OMVC, what it is, and the Washington Consumer Showcase that is in the process of being concluded right now. So I'm going to talk mostly about the results of the consumer side of the world and not the technicalities of how it was done exactly. So the neat part about mobile television is that it's a one-to-many model, which is kind of obvious to all of us broadcasters. One signal, many listeners, viewers, whatever, and we don't have to set up a separate IP connection with each of them individually and use a lot of bandwidth for that. So that's kind of a handy approach to getting video to mobile devices. The thing about the Washington Showcase is that it's mostly centered on local broadcasting, and that's the kind of thing that we are certainly interested in as broadcasters. Okay, as I said, there are some key benefits to mobile television, we think. One is that it exploits capabilities we already have as broadcasters, which I said we're all broadcasting already, digital data streams on the air, and so this exploits that capability that we already have. It's a relatively inexpensive addition to a TV station plant to be able to simulcast their main channel or any single channel or two in a mobile mechanism. One of the things about television, when you're marketing television, is people kind of understand what television is and what they expect. So free TV is pretty much a given, over-the-air wireless broadcasting. The other piece to this is that on small devices, it looks very good, and it looks very high quality compared to internet streaming over cell towers and the like. As everybody knows, you don't get freezes, buffer overruns, and all kinds of things like that, underruns, in terms of the experience for the viewer. And the other piece to this, from which I'm going to talk mostly about, is the new business opportunities that present themselves. And you wonder, well, what's the new business opportunity for something you give away for free? and that is that the system has the ability, with the addition of some type of back channel URL in a device, to measure what that consumer or viewer is doing. So everybody gets to be metered, if you would, in that sense, and the data can be fed back to the stations. As most of you know, on the sales side of television, one of the biggest competitors is web advertising. The reason why web advertising is such a competitor to us on the sales side of television stations is that it's measurable. And every click is measured, where they came from, where they went to, how long they stayed there. And selling against that kind of a atmosphere or background to advertisers and agencies is a tough sell these days in the television industry. So mobile television will give us some ammunition to work backwards in that and to have some data to show who is actually watching it. So giving away a free service, at least the way we can monetize this, is by audience measurement. And from a broadcasting point of view, we don't expect to be having very many stations transmitting mobile television without some kind of audience measurement mechanism designed in. All right, Open Mobile Video Coalition consists of about 30, a little over 30 broadcast groups, representing almost 900 television stations across the United States. There are six networks involved with this. Probably around 100 million plus homes covered by those stations. There are around 70 stations currently on the air in the United States right now. And you can see some of the logos, or the logos of many of the groups that are involved with the Open Mobile Video Coalition and who are members. Those member stations are shown on this map, covering, as I said, a little over 100 million households, all of the top 50 DMAs, 96 of the top 100 DMAs, 69 DMAs with three or more stations, and 98 DMAs with two stations. So that's just the Open Mobile Video Coalition. There's no rule about people going on the air on their own. They don't have to be a member. Anybody can buy the equipment and go on the air without any authority or permission or anything else to do that. So driving the ecosystem is the whole point of the Open Mobile Video Coalition. First and foremost, to keep the ecosystem on track and to keep it focused on the project, and keep all, and more, most importantly, to keep all the broadcasters together. Many of you in this meeting are probably aware that keeping broadcasters together on any single topic is pretty tough to do and has historically not done too well. NAB and MSTV and trade organizations notwithstanding, there are a lot of our owners have other ideas about how they ought to run their own businesses. So it's quite an accomplishment, I think, to have all the broadcast or a big chunk of broadcasters come together, whether they're members of MSTV, NAB, and trade organizations or not, to coalesce under the umbrella of one single topic. So, as a result, the OMVC has become kind of the focal, not kind of, is the focal point for everybody who in the ecosystem who wants to know anything about mobile television in the United States, whether they want to sell devices or programming or anything else, or stations, how they want to get on the air, what it's good for, lobbying Congress, you name it. OMVC is the focal point for that. As I mentioned, the advocacy piece up in the upper left, talking about deployment and getting it deployed across the United States, developing the market. When it says multi-vendor, that means all across the whole ecosystem. As most of you know by now, OMVC has done a lot of promotion of activities not only in Washington, but at trade shows throughout over time, over the last 4 years, 3 years. Open Mobile Video Coalition was formed in early 2007, and they've been at most of the all of the NAB's CESs, CTIA activities, the wireless group as well. A piece of this also is technical development. That was the genesis of OMVC. At the time in 2007, there were 8 or 10 or 12 different proposed schemes for broadcasting mobile television in the United States being presented to the ATSC to standardize, and ATSC was in a quandary as to just whether to standardize many of them, one of them, how are they going to pick, and so on. And the OMVC was formed partially to meet that need and to speak with one voice to the ATSC and help pick a single system for the United States. And we've done that over time. And the last piece I'll mention is outreach to all the communities involved, whether they're in the United States or outside the United States, that want to participate in the ecosystem in the United States. As I've talked about the OMVC, one of the things I haven't talked about is the business of making money, or the business of mobile television. And OMVC being an amalgamation of whole bunch of broadcast companies has a difficult time as a trade organization of sitting down and putting together a singular business plan for the United States. There are laws against that in the United States called antitrust. And so OMVC as a trade organization can't come up with a single business plan for the United States on its own. So what's happening currently right now, there have been several announcements about business ventures based on mobile in the United States. There are two of them listed here. First one is the Mobile Content Venture, which is a group of four companies that have gotten together and are deciding on business plans. And then there is another group called the Mobile 500, consisting of a whole bunch of additional television groups which are getting together and putting together their business plan for the United States. Under the Mobile Content Venture, there are the four entities involved, which is NBC, Fox, ION, and a group called Pearl. Pearl is a group of broadcasters, members of OMVC. Nine companies got together to form a business plan and have joined the Mobile Content Venture. So there are four partners in a Mobile Content Venture, in one of which is Pearl, as I said, Fox, NBC, and ION. Pearl has these nine companies involved, and they are the broadcast groups involved. The Mobile 500 consists of about 38 groups of television stations who have gotten together also for their business plan to put that together. So the business community is coming together to make a business out of this and make it work for the United States as a business, not just throwing up TV stations on the air. Let me jump back. One of the issues, the biggest issue I think going forward with mobile television transmission in the United States, is not the technical part and not the business part, but it is content. Where is the content coming from? Who has license to that content, and what the terms of that content licensing might be? Networks have their own ideas as to who owns what pieces of content. Syndicated programmers have ideas as to who owns the content and what it's worth. Trade unions have their ideas as to what might be useful for their interests as well. So there are a lot of fingers in the pie when it comes to trying to figure out business ventures on the content side. That's one of the reasons that MCV was formed by two networks out of the four big networks, is to have content play into that. Okay, for the Washington Consumer Showcase. Washington Consumer Showcase involves nine TV stations. They're together transmitting a total of 23 channels. Some of the channels are free, some of the channels are pay, some of the channels are radio only, sound only, radio stations. Some of them have the simulcasting, the local TV content, and the premium channels are scrambled and keys are used. There is a thing called an electronic service guide that is out there, and a way to tune to the channels, an easy way to tune to the channels, a consolidated service guide amongst all the broadcasters involved. The service guide also can contain, and in this case does contain, advertising. So what's the point of having the Washington Consumer Showcase? The point is to check out with the actual consumers what they might want to watch and what they'd be willing to pay for and how often they'd want to watch it and when they'd want to watch it, where they'd want to watch it, and do a regular consumer study. So that's what was the whole point of this activity is ongoing at the moment. Logos of partners. The reason I show this is because all of these companies are not only participating in the showcase, but have lent their equipment, their activities, their expertise in this activity. And so we're in the Open Mobile Video Coalition very thankful for all their contributions involved in this. As you can see, there are trade organizations involved as well. Okay, you probably can't see this, but this is the channel lineup for the 23 channels and what the content is, including some of the logos of the network programming that's involved. I'll just pause a moment here and let you take a peek at that. Okay. Okay, so the applications and features of this service are listed here. As I mentioned earlier, audience measurement is certainly included in here. In other words, where people are tuning, what ads they're looking at when their channel changes are going on. There are interstitial ads involved with this. So that during the channel change time and acquisition time of the next channel, ads are popping up. And then we do, as I said, location analysis. Service protection is involved for the premium channels and with fixed keys. There's a limited test, so we can at least see what people's reactions are to these kinds of activities. Captioning is included in this. 708 captions are included. Metadata, along with which comprise the electronic service guide, what channels are coming up, where to tune to them, and what's the programming coming up in the next 3 days. Network. We set up a network monitoring center at WUSA, the Gannett station in Washington, to monitor all 23 channels all the time, so we could tell if any of them were off the air, having difficulties locking up, things like that, so that we could tie that into the actual consumer data. No sense measuring something that wasn't on the air or viewable at that time. Also, we also tried out an ad campaign with the Ad Council with a roadblock type commercial ad to look at not only interstitials but banner and interactive ads. And we also did interactivity on the back channel with voting and click to URLs embedded in the programming. One of the other things that was or is being tested there is an on-channel booster, single frequency network, if you would, on WNVT, and that's an ongoing project which is we're being helped by Intel help finance that piece of the project. I see Bill raising his hand. Right. This was a station that's on the fringe of the market, and to increase penetration in buildings from a business point of view, you want good building penetration, which is difficult from afar. Okay. As I said, the devices themselves were Samsung Moment devices. I'll go through the devices ahead, but they had good quality screens, and the nice part about it is it's full video, 30 frames per second video, high quality audio, 48 kilobits with AAC plus coding. So we're very happy with the standard in terms of video quality. As I mentioned, there was an electronic service guide for which could be used and tied into voting, ratings, messaging, URL synchronization, and so on. Conditional access was used, as I said, and audience measurement was captured. In the audience measurement, also their GPS location was captured as well as part of the plan. Here are the three devices that are being used in the showcase. 150 Samsung Moment cell phones were used. These were contributed by Samsung to the process. Sprint was the carrier that was used and volunteered 150 of their users who actually used the Samsung Moment phones. So we took away their Samsung Moment phones that they were using, ported all their personal data on that phone to a new device, prototype Samsung Moment phone, so we could actually see what their activity was without getting bothered by having their phone numbers missing and all that kind of stuff. So it's a true one-to-one comparison with their normal activities using the Samsung Moment phone. So that was quite a process to actually get that all done. The other piece that's being tested is a Dell mini netbook. 200 of those are out right now being evaluated as well. The Tivizen, many of you may have heard of the Tivizen, which is a device that is a receiver, a mobile receiver, ATSC mobile receiver, but retransmits to any device on Wi-Fi. So it's a mini Wi-Fi hub. And those weren't actually tested in the field, but they were done in focus groups in terms of the research. And there are also out in the field 40 LG mobile portable DVD players, which LG has contributed to this process. So the idea was to look at a variety of devices that we could get a hold of and to see what the activity level was from a consumer point of view using different kinds of screens and devices. Okay, so it's a single device, whichever device it happens to be, but you could use it for, I mean, they're good for these kinds of activities and use cases. One of the things that OMVC did in the technical group was come up with a list of use cases for ATSC and the industry so people could design to them so that you had some idea what these could be used for. These are four use cases that I'm showing here. You could do, besides just over-the-air with regular TV viewing, there's voting, severe weather alerts, which is pretty typical of what we do in television today. As I said, advertising during channel changes, and then polling, those kinds of activities could be done in an interactive sense. So, as I mentioned before, we think there is an additional opportunity here with mobile television as an advertising platform. Something we don't have in fixed television today is when you're doing channel changes is to be able to insert commercial activity in there, either transmitted by a broadcaster could be even, depending on the business that you wanted to do with the carrier or whoever they buy the phone from, it could be a device-centric source. Doesn't necessarily have to be transmitted from the broadcaster. It could be in the phone from the phone manufacturer, let's say, or something like that. It's kind of interesting on the advertising side, and people, this is part of the results of the surveys we've done, is that the recall on mobile ads from this set of viewers was considerably higher than it was over on regular television. People remembered the ads better that they saw on a mobile device better than they did watching on a big screen sitting in their living room. They even remembered the interstitial ads, the billboards or whatever popped up during the channel change time quite well. So that's a very happy outcome from a broadcasting point of view. To do this showcase, there were two companies that were involved in the research, the consumer research. Harris Interactive, the company that does the Harris polls, did the qualitative analysis and helped choose the customers from a pure research audience point of view. They set up the whole plan for us and gave frequent reports to the members of OMVC as to what the progress was and made adjustments as we went along. And they're still doing this. This is still going on. Rentrek, which is a quantitative data company, I wouldn't say it's not exactly like Nielsen. It's a competitor to Nielsen, if you would. But they were the ones that actually did the quantitative, measured who was watching when, and laid out all the software to do all of that. The reason they were chosen is that they've done mobile activities and tests before. There were two notable ones in the United States prior to this, and that was the Highwire trials that went on in Las Vegas several years ago. And they're the company of record for Flow Television, Flow TV. So they have a pretty good history in terms of mobile activities and measurement. Okay, we'll talk about the qualitative part. Harris set up an interactive research community, which involved a private social network, if you would, activity for the 150 people. Using just the participants, and they had a screener to screen the social networks. This is so everybody could talk to each other, who were involved in the survey, and the company could also ask a lot of questions about what they thought about what they were seeing and what their usage patterns were. They did a lot of research activities. They had on discussions, polls, galleries, surveys, all kinds of things to ascertain what the use of the activities were. As I said, it was fully moderated and managed. The folks weren't just on their own doing this, but it was always monitored all the time. So they had everybody was assigned research to do in this process with the polls, and Harris managed that whole process for us. As I said, there's been a rich stream of data coming out of this showcase. As I've mentioned before, the 150 participants. It's interesting that out of these 150 participants, they themselves had 80 user-generated discussion groups going on. There were also 68 user-generated surveys. These were not Harris-generated. They formed 13 different groups of their own on their own and made over 8,000 comments about what their experiences were on the Samsung device. On the Dell netbook, there were 197 participants, 33 user-generated discussions, 12 user-generated surveys, 11 different friends groups that were formed with about 7,300 comments. So the data is pretty rich in what is what their experiences has been. Okay. Now, how did they actually use these devices, and what did they use them for? It's kind of interesting here, the daily use. 63% of the respondents access the app, this every day. So, and about 22% of these are using it three or more times a day. So you can see how it's divided out here, with a darker color, one or two times a day. The light green three or more times a day, and the others less than a time a day. Where they watch is kind of interesting as well. As you might expect, on the go was the biggest piece of this in this trial. At work is kind of interesting. For those of you who might be managers, 42% of these people use these devices at work. Or the work equivalent, school, work, whatever. And then 26% of these people looked at them, used them at home. A lot of this was done as second TV sets. There's been, I'll go into it a little more detail, but a lot of people used devices at home, which you might not expect. So, you know, it's interesting. 5% weren't sure where they were. It's kind of lost, I guess. I want to kind of go through this. I think some of the words of some of these participants are significant. The thing that we noticed in this showcase is that people watched TV more than they had in the past. So it increased their TV viewing over and above what they had reported doing in the past. And as I mentioned, there are a whole variety of locations that were involved. Let me read this. You probably can't read it. I can barely read it here. This person said, "During the evening, I'm at work, and there's a period in my day when I'm responsible for just reviewing paperwork, and during that time, I just kind of sneak off and watch Comedy Central a whole lot." Next one, quoted, said, "Normally I would stay at home and maybe be late for work because I really want to watch the news. So I could start watching it at home and then put it on the channel when I'm leaving the house so I could still listen to the thing when I was driving to work." And here's the best one, I think. "Found myself watching TV places I wouldn't normally watch TV, like the office, the gym, the doctor's office, and the bathroom. Yes, I said it. You know, you have done it too." I was at a restaurant and I was watching The Office because they messed up my order. I was ready to go home and finish watching it as soon as I walked in. I didn't miss much. That was cool. The other piece that I think from a broadcasting point of view is notable and heartening is that mobile television is good for emergency situations. All of us in SBE are very concerned about EAS activities, notifying the public about dangers and so on. Mobile television is probably one of the better ways to do that. Being able to show maps. I mean, radio is good. Radio gets out there. Radio has a lot of activity. But showing pictures along with it from an emergency point of view, I think in a mobile sense, a battery-powered mobile sense is a big high point when it comes to regulatory issues, spectrum issues, and so on. So let me read a few quotes about this. This just happened during the trial. The trial basically took place from May until the end of August in the Moment phones, and the Dell Netbooks is still going on. It'll be finished at the end of this month, actually. It says here, I was grateful to have something because otherwise I would be just trying to read a web page on my phone. That was actually a good chance to have local broadcast when the power was out. Another one is quoted as saying, the park ranger said, I should move out. I turned on the television, probably would have gone home, but I was able to watch the local news and see it was just going to pass. Here's a very interesting one. The security officers wouldn't tell us what was going on. This was in a mall. So I turned on the news. I turned on the news and found out it's a bomb threat. I was stuck in the mall. I was like, are you serious? You could see on the news that the mall that I work at, the street that I cross and should go to work. And there's another one at the bottom here. It says, local news and weather is essential. Having other channels is fun, but not necessarily a necessity. Talking about being informed and talking about the picture quality, says, I would rather have the weather and a few network shows. Keeps me entertained while I'm on the go. Another one is, live news and real-time issues are the only reasons I would have this on a phone. Local news and weather is the most valuable programming to me. Next would be talk shows, Judge Pirro, Dr. Phil, Judge Mathis, etc. So a lot of people like the local aspect of this, which is very good for local television. Okay. Talking about the quantity of people watching and when. Obviously, in a trial like this, people are very curious about what they've just been handed and instructed to do and so on, and so everybody is trying this out right at the beginning. So we expect, normally, everybody expects in cases like this for activity to slow down as people get used to it and it kind of can float into the background. This chart shows the average daily minutes viewed on a Moment phone from middle of May until the end of August. And it shows starting up around 60 minutes and kind of leveling off around 40 minutes. And again, I would point out that these are additional minutes over and above what people are watching TV as right now. So we feel this is a good activity for us. You can see there are a lot of spikes in there. The average is one thing, but the spikes definitely show their activity levels change depending on what's going on in the world and the local aspects of what's happening. This isn't a kind of a steady state thing where it's on all the time. It's interesting also talking about frequency of views. How often did they actually turn it on and view it from a television point of view? keeping in mind this was also their phone. So started off around 11 times a day they accessed this, and it's pretty much leveled off at this time around six times a day. So it shows that it's not just going to drop off to zero, and that activity will continue. You see some pretty hefty spikes in there, and those are all tied to events, news events, actually, that people are interested in. It's kind of interesting from a broadcaster business point of view as well, and that is when are they actually using it? As you can see, early morning, well, I should say first, the light color, green, is Monday through Friday, and the dark color is Saturday and Sunday. So Saturday and Sunday viewing was definitely down from during the week, which is kind of different, I think, from what you might expect, is that Monday through Friday, working, doing all kinds of activities, is the time they're using it when they're on the go, and not as much on the weekends. I should also point out that since this is the time this was done was in May to the end of August, there weren't a lot of activities on the weekend which might lead people to watching TV during the summer. So it's summer television, not a lot of super sporting events going on, things like that. So this is what it is. So as you can see, the biggest piece in there is daytime, 9 to 4, early fringe, 4 to 7, prime access, not so much. In the evening, but then it jumps up during prime time, and then late fringe and overnight. So people are watching different amounts based on their activities. I'm not sure, you know, what's going to happen in the long run, but based on these folks, 200 people in Washington, this is, you know, for a fair amount of time, this is their activity level that's been measured. Might be kind of interesting to see what time of the day they watched. I mean, now we talked about their activities and where. It's interesting that it's pretty much evenly divided. It was kind of a shock to us right off the bat, is that at almost at any given time of the day, the percentage of people viewing on Monday through Friday was kind of equal throughout the day. And that's interesting, certainly from an advertising and a business point of view. Day of the week. So far, we haven't been able to figure this one out. Don't know why Tuesday is the biggest day of the week to watch mobile television. It just is, at least it was in this survey. So it's kind of interesting. And why Monday is down, I don't know. We don't know, but that's what the data has shown. Okay, so what kind of content are people actually watching? As you can see, the top line there is, it says local news. This is number of episodes. In other words, how many shows they actually watched of these various types of shows. And I guess I'll read down the list since it might not be visible. The local news is the top one. The next line is reality. Then comes entertainment news and documentary, talk shows, sitcoms, kids animation, national news, paid shows, food shows, adult animation, court shows, unknown, movie, drama, sports, international, stand-up comedy, documentary, political news, and business news. These are categories that the research companies came up with for these kinds of content. So, as you can see from a local broadcaster's point of view, it bodes well for people watching television in this way. This is the same kind of chart, but this is based on total unique viewers rather than episodes. And the chart looks very similar. It's interesting that's the case. One of the questions I've been asked on this slide is why sports is so far down the line. It's maybe half to two-thirds of the way down the list. And as I said before, this was probably because, or for two reasons. One is, as I said, this was done during the summer. There weren't any Super Bowl events, no sports playoffs, none of that stuff, and no summer sporting season, if you would. And then the other rationale is that a lot of the content that was carried was not sports-centric as well, no ESPN or anything like that. So depending on what your what's available, this is what was used. So that's the consumer showcase. People who want to know about the OMVC, this is a website. It's actually a fairly interesting website. As I said, it's a coalition of broadcasters to make all this happen in the ecosystem. And I'm very happy that that's all going on from an ongoing point of view, especially since the spectrum issue has come up, which shall be talked about this afternoon. Mobile television is certainly a good use of the spectrum. Okay, time for questions. Thank you, everyone.
Hi, Sterling. On this test, were the broadcasters able to secure the full clearance of their respective networks and syndicators, or did they have to bridge certain day parts with other material because they couldn't get the clearances? I guess personally, you're correct that the technology we've got, it can be done. That's no problem. It's that they've got to get all the lawyers and salespeople in a room and say, look, if we want to make this go, we've got to make it that people want to watch the show, that they don't have to miss their favorite news show or episodic TV. But for the purposes of this test, would I be able to find on that receiver, MH receiver in Washington, the same programming at the same time as the over-the-air standard version?
Yes, the TV stations were simulcasting. From a permission point of view, yes, we had permission to transmit all of the channels, cable channels that were transmitted and so on. Everything was permitted. So that was all covered at that point in time. Of course, it's easy to get permission for an experiment. It's another thing to get permission to make money on. So that's a whole different ball of wax when it comes to finances, legal, and agreements and contracts. Yes?
Were there any comments made by the users regarding battery life on their devices? And or is there anything going on with our friends across the pond or in the military that would be helpful as far as information sharing and how to best do this?
Battery life was a problem. As you might imagine, us engineers in the room, glomming a receiver into a phone, which wasn't designed to do that initially, was a problem. Battery life was an issue. The device was not, or whatever, wasn't designed for that kind of a power drain and use. So we think that devices that are designed for that purpose will have a different outcome. But that was an issue in this case. I might also add, from a technical barrier point of view on the receiving device, there were glitches. Meaning, as I said, this wasn't designed for that. And so there were several times, we had lockup issues, updating software, fixing problems, antenna issues falling off and things like that, where you had a device that wasn't really designed for this purpose initially. The silver lining piece of this, as far as we're concerned, is even with battery issues, antenna issues, software issues, if you would, all those kinds of barriers, we had viewing up. And we had people just plowing through and getting it done and watching it. I mean, people complained about it, you know, on their social network sites, but it didn't stop them from actually using the service. So we think that, you know, having the device tailored and designed for this purpose will be even better than the results we're getting right now, going through this kind of, if you would, filter right now that we're putting up there in an artificial kind of way. As for European services, I think that's what you were talking about. I understand that the mobile services in Europe are not taking off too well. There are a whole bunch of different issues in Europe, we think, than in the United States. The United States market, we think, is a totally different way of going about this. I mean, the mechanisms we have, private sector, all that kind of thing, as opposed to a lot of governmental broadcasts in Europe and a lot of other things going on standards-wise, we think that the European experience with mobile television is not probably a good model for us to follow. We kind of like the Korean model or Japanese model or Chinese model, where it's very pervasive in Korea and it's very pervasive in Japan. And so we think that that's more of the model we're going to use in the United States. I forgot the third thing you asked me. Oh, military. I don't know. The answer is I don't know. I have not heard of any military activity in this area, though military looks at a lot of different technologies, commercial technologies, I'm sure, over time, but I have not heard of any activity in the military area. One more.
I was in the Harris booth and looking at the little receiver they had, which was a cell phone, and they assured me that I was not using cell phone time to look at this video. It was an over-the-air free broadcast. Now, it sounds like this data return link is a very big part of this. Would the broadcaster have to partner with the cell phone company, and am I incurring data charges every time I watch over-the-air TV?
The answer is yes. You would get data charges but transmitting data. And you would have to make an arrangement with a carrier if you were going to embed this in a phone that they control. Nothing goes into a device from a carrier point of view that they don't approve of or get some piece of the action or something. So that is certainly one of the negotiating items when it comes to getting these into cell phones. So yes. But the data that's being transmitted, I should say, on a back channel is very low data. I mean, there's hardly any data. You're just transmitting a URL. You're transmitting little tiny bits of data back and forth. I mean, you're not transmitting video, audio, any of that stuff in a back channel. All you're doing is answering yes and no and things like that. So we don't think that that's a big issue in terms of data usage from a carrier point of view. Another one? Okay, I'm waxing long, so thank you. Okay, thank you.